Okay, Year 11, we're back into it again. We're going to be jumping ahead a little bit when we look at the road today. We're going to be jumping ahead to page 31. We're looking at just the paragraph in the middle of the page on page 31. I'm going to read it first and then we'll have a quick chat about it. Well, I'll chat about it. Okay, he woke toward the morning with the fire down to coals and walked out to the road. Everything was all alight, as if the lost sun were returning at last. The snow orange and quivering, a forest fire was making its way along the tinderbox ridges above them, flaring and shimmering against the overcast like the northern lights. Cold as it was, he stood there a long time. The colour of it moved something in him long forgotten. Make a list. Recite a litany. Remember. Okay, I just wanted to stop there because and make this point that the character of the man is so complicated, and he's such a a complex character. He's obviously driven by this strong, intense paternal desire to make sure that his son survives, and that is the driving force of his journey. But at the same time, we have these moments where he feels the weight of humanity being lost. And so this action where he's so moved by the colour as he sees the sun rising and waking and seeing this, and he can see the beauty in it and he acknowledges it. The way that it's described, the snow orange and quivering, and he talks about as if the lost son were returning at last. You know, that links to what I was saying in the previous podcast, that this this image of fire and light is really important, and it does become this reoccurring motif of the maintaining of humanity when we think about humanistic values and not losing who we are as people and what makes us human. And part of that is our ability to create, and that's why here he's talking about make a list, recite a litany, remember. And so he's worried that as he walks this road with his son, and as he sees the world now destroyed, and in this post-apocalyptic setting, he's worried that the things that are worth remembering about humanity will be lost. And so we constantly see him make reference to these sorts of ideas, and this is one that I just really wanted to point out to you. Okay, if we turn the page to page 32, we have a dream that we see, and we see these dreams reoccurring. And it's of his wife. So I'm just going to read the second paragraph on page 32. In his dream, she was sick and he cared for her. The dream bore the look of sacrifice, but he thought differently. He did not take care of her, and she died alone somewhere in the dark. And there is no other dream, nor other waking world, and there is no other tale to tell. This is really interesting. He constantly links back to her, and his first few dreams are of her and I guess her state towards deterioration. We know that in this bleak and horrific world that the world's become, that she can't continue. She decides, we don't know if she does die, but she definitely leaves. There's the implication that she dies, and we'll come to that later, but she can't take it anymore. She can't take the bleak outlook upon her life and humanity. And she wants to kill herself, and she wants to kill her son. But the man won't let her because he still clings to that hope, you know, carrying that fire. But we do get a sense that, you know, he is carrying the burden, the weight of her, the fact that she gave up, the fact that she didn't continue to, carry this fire with them. The next line, on this road there are no God-spoke men. They are gone, and I am left, and they have taken with them the world. Query, how does the never-to-be differ from what never was? He constantly has these philosophical moments where he's questioning humanity and what's left of humanity and what's been taken, and we see him doing that there. And there is a connection between he and God. He talks, he speaks of, throughout the novel, the thing that he feels charged with is caring for his son, that he feels that God has left him with that duty. And so he talks to his son about God, and there is a sense of relationship between father and son, and also of their relationship and belief in in God, in a greater being. Okay, we're going to move along a little bit, and we're going to start looking at page 56. Okay. We're going to look at towards the end of page 56. I'll just read, and then I'll talk to you about that as well. When he got back, the boy was awake. "I'm sorry," he said. "It's okay. Go to sleep. I wish I was with Mum." He didn't answer. He sat beside the small figure wrapped in the quilts and blankets, and after a while he said, "You mean that you wish you were dead?" "Yes." "You mustn't say that." "But I do." "Don't say it. It's a bad thing to say." "I can't help it." "I know, but you have to." "How do I do it?" "I don't know." "We're survivors," he told her across the flame of the lamp. "Survivors," she said. "Yes, what in God's name are you talking about? We're not survivors. We're the walking dead in a horror film." "I'm begging you. I don't care. I don't care if you cry. It doesn't mean anything to me. Please, stop it. I'm begging you. I'll do anything." "Such as what?" "I should have done it a long time ago, when there were 3 bullets in the gun instead of 2. I was stupid. We've been over all of this. I didn't bring myself to this. I was brought. And now I'm done. I thought about not even telling you. That would probably have been best. You have 2 bullets, and then what? You can't protect us. You say you would die for us, but what good is that? I'd take him with me if it weren't for you. You know I would. It's the right thing to do. You're crazy." "No, I'm speaking the truth. Sooner or later, they'll catch us and kill us. They'll rape me, and they'll rape him. And they are going to rape us and kill us and eat us, and you won't face it. You'd rather wait for it to happen, but I can't." She sat there smoking a slender length of dried grapevine as if it were some rare cheroot, holding with it a certain elegance, her other hand across her knees where she'd drawn them up. She watched him across the small flame. "We used to talk about death," she said. "We don't anymore. Why is that?" "I don't know. It's because it's here. There's nothing left to talk about." "I wouldn't leave you." "I don't care. It's meaningless. You can think of me as faithless slut if you like. I've taken a new lover. He can give me what you cannot. Death is not a lover." "Oh, yes, he is. Please don't do this. I'm sorry. I can't do it alone." Okay, I'll stop it there. All right, so we have this section where the boy, back on page 56, he says that he wants to join his dead mother. And the father's horrified at this, and he can't allow the son to verbalize this because then we have the flashback to the mother with the same tone about her wanting to give up. And so the father is so trying to instill in his son something different. And I think that the mother becomes this greater representation of a loss of hope that people can have and experience. And I think the father represents that defying against all odds, that clinging to some hope, some shred of hope that they will be okay, and also trying desperately to cling to morality, to cling to values, to be, as the father and son continually talk about throughout the novel, the good guys and not the bad guys. And so there's a real contrast in the way that the mother speaks and the father speaks. And she's, she seems horrible and heartless to us. The metaphor of "I've taken a new lover, he can give me what you cannot," and the father acknowledging that death isn't a lover, just represents the absolute bleakness that their humanity has come to, that she would rather die, that she would rather kill her, murder her own son in a double suicide than face what the world has become. And so it is the world that and what it's become that has driven her to this. And that's what she says when she said, "I didn't bring myself to this. I was brought, and now I'm done." And I think Cormac McCarthy wants us to see that that there is hope, and so this is a bleak novel, and yet there is hope throughout it, and the boy and the man represent that. And so now I'll get you to unpack that a little bit more with some questions that I'll put on iLearn. And then we'll next episode keep moving on. Okay, thanks very much, you're 11.
I'm going to get you to-